College football analyst Cole Kublik joins us to break down what he thinks Auburn can do this season. We talk landscape of college football, including should ADs be on the playoff committee, and we've got a new sport we found that is brutal and unbelievably visceral. You don't want to miss it on today's episode, Crane & Company. The VIP guest list just keeps rolling on in. And we thought, even though we're in the slower days of the college football season, but you got UFL, we just got done with the draft, a lot of stuff still going on as we prepare for the college football season. Our good buddy from the Cube Show, you can find him basically anywhere where they're playing football, not the European style, but the right kind here in the United States. Our buddy Cole Cube.
Yeah.
Cole,
what's up, guys?
What's up, guys? How are we doing?
Man, doing fantastic. Hoping to blink twice and get to the end of August. You know where I want to start, Cole, is somewhere that's near and dear to mine and your hearts. And that's Auburn heading into this season. You know, it feels like with Hugh Freeze, every offseason there's been an unknown that's kind of been eliminated. And this roster, when you look at it, especially on the line of scrimmage, I feel better than I have about an Auburn offensive line in a long time. You know what you're going to get out of that defensive line, Keldrick Falk, some of these guys. To me, the biggest unknown is with Jackson Arnold and his ability to go from one RPO style of offense, where he struggled with some ancillary, you know, circumstances, injuries, to another one and that jump that he can make. How do you feel about where Auburn is right now roster-wise and where Jackson Arnold kind of is and if he can make that jump?
I think roster-wise, you feel pretty good. You look at the wide receiver position. Some people say best in the nation. Some people say best in the SEC. They're good. I'll just leave it at that. From a comparative sake, we can have that conversation another day. Tight end, mildly concerning to me. It's not a necessity in this offense, but it could be of great benefit. I don't think running back is going to be dynamic or great or A++ or elite, but they can be good enough to go win football games. Also not a position that Hugh Freeze has had to lean on in his offenses in the past. I'm with you, Jake. The offensive line's got a chance to be pretty good. I think Connor Lue can be one of the better centers in the SEC. You got a big physical guard in Jeremiah Wright. You bring in Mason Murphy and Xavier Chaplin from USC and Virginia Tech. I think they're both upgrades, specifically at left tackle from what Auburn had a year ago. And you now have a little bit of depth that eases some of the concerns of one of the guys, let's be honest, you're just going to lose at some point in the season, whether it's a game, a quarter, a series, three games, it's just going to happen in the trenches. But the Jackson Arnold questions are real. I had him a couple of times last year. All the talent's there. He can make every throw, great mobility. You can utilize his legs. And I think that's why you go get Ashton Daniels from Stanford, somebody who can at least be a stopgap if something were to happen to Jackson Arnold, because you're probably going to run him some. He can break you down that way. And we all know that opens up so much more offensively. I just wonder mentally, emotionally, if he's going to be able to get over that hump. He needs to be rewired. He's going to have to be coached hard, and he's going to have to take the coaching and work his way into this system if it's really going to go. He couldn't let go of the football last year. That was the biggest problem. Now, also, like Greg McElroy and I have had great conversations on our show about playing for a defensive-minded coach, and it was things I never really thought about. I played for an offensive-minded coach and a defensive-minded coach that was pretty hands-off. But by that time in my career, it didn't really matter kind of from the top down what was happening. We knew what we were doing with our position group and our side of the ball. But that mentality of don't screw it up, don't turn it over, don't make the mistake, don't allow a team to get an advantage on us. Mm-hmm. And you start hearing some of the things that Greg shared with me that Saban said that probably Venables was saying, and that a lot of these defensive-minded coaches are probably utilizing, and you start to think to yourself, man, I bet Lane Kiffin never says that. Hugh Freeze never says that. Lincoln Riley never says that. Like, the mentality is most likely, go get it, boy. Like, cut it loose. Like, Jeff Lebby is not out there saying, hey, man, whatever you do, don't make a mistake. Yeah. Jeff Lebby is saying, attack, 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 go, 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 get it, get it, get it. Why did you not take the shot here? So maybe the mentality shift could be of great benefit to him. But seeing things and reacting to things has to happen in a very different way if he's going to be able to utilize that skill set.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, with a defensive-minded coach putting a governor on a golf cart. Like, they they want to kind of not just let you go out there and be free enough to make some mistakes. And that's a great point you bring up, Colin. And, you know, there's two quick things I want to get at, ask you about Auburn. One, when you watch Oklahoma, and look, I know the wide receiver room was an absolute triage tent last year. The offensive line underperformed, had some injuries of their own. But that RPO style, and I know it's different. I know what Hugh Freeze does is different than what Latrell and them were trying to do. And there's more nuance to it, and you continue to evolve. But if you're Hugh Freeze, and you get a guy like Jackson Arnold that can do both, that can run and throw, you saw him struggle with the RPO. Do you maybe not lean as heavily on that? Or do you say, listen, this is what we do. This is how we do it. Or do you tweak it to maybe where he's not putting himself in the conflict that you want to put defenses in with that RPO game, or do you just let it ride?
No, you got to go with your system. You have to, yeah. You have to get him, because he's capable of it, to adjust inside of it. We got to still look at the factors that were working against him outside of maybe sort of Venable's mentality and the trickle down effect of that. You know, he had an offensive coordinator, Seth Littrell, who I love, but had never coached quarterbacks before. And that was all of a sudden his job. Then Joe John Finley's got to step in and be the OC. He played tight end. Yeah. So speaking that language, I mean, Seth Littrell was a fullback in college. So maybe speaking that language, something he needs just a little bit more of as well. We saw that offensive line last year. It wasn't a Bill Beedenbow offensive line. They were dinged up. They were hurt. Guys wouldn't practice. Then they had to try to play. Then the guys playing couldn't practice. So there was no ability for that group to gel. There wasn't much of a run game to get going. And then, like you talked about, all your receivers were dinged up and hurt. Nick Anderson's hurt. Deion Burks is injured. You just had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So I think all of those working against him played into some of the things that you saw with how he operated. But I think he's capable of doing it. It's just mentally and emotionally getting him in a place where he's comfortable with it, not being afraid of those mistakes, not being afraid to make the wrong read, because if you make enough of the right reads, we're going to outscore him anyway. It's not going to be a big deal.
Yeah, and I know it's May. You may have a different view of this once fall camp is halfway done or over. What's the ceiling for this Auburn team?
I think probably 9 wins. I still don't think they have the depth to be a playoff team, deep playoff run team. And also, too, I think offensively you have a couple takeover guys. Then they're mainly at wide receiver. One could be at quarterback. That you can go just lean on against Georgia. You can lean on against Bama that can just say, we're not playing great, but this guy's going to get it done. I don't know how many of those guys they have on defense. You mentioned one in Keldrick Fogg, who I do think can be that guy. DeMarcus Riddick, I think, has a chance to be that guy. They're just not super scary on defense right now. Yeah. And that's okay. You don't have to be dominant in every facet defensively to play good football or to get stops. I just wonder, is the defense ever going to be able to take over a game if they have to? Now, DJ's done a great job since he's been there. He has coached his rear end off. They have been sound in a lot of ways, but there's not a lot of guys that I think strike fear into opponents' eyes when you're going to have to prepare to play against them. So I'm actually more concerned about that side of the football than I am the offensive side.
Yeah, well, Cone, you know, if you're not elite on the defensive side, that means you're probably going to have to take chances. And knowing DJ, he ain't afraid to drop guys out of helicopters.
I got propped up by some really good defenses. I'll just say that. Cole, I saw this week that Nebraska's athletic director, Troy Dannon, was named to the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. And he replaced Maryland's AD and joins a dozen or so athletic directors on the committee. I just want to ask you, is it a good thing for sitting athletic directors to be on the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, or is it problematic?
I think it depends on who the person is. It depends on their background in football. Because I think a lot of times we would say, oh, athletic director, they're wired into all of it. Today's athletic director is very different than 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, athletic director, the Barry Alvarez that just stepped in as the head coach and just kind of ran the show, knew all the boosters, knew where to go to get answers and made things happen. Now, it's much more of a CEO role. It's much more of a business-oriented role. Mm-hmm. And I personally don't know if that's going to be the best bet for those to be on that committee every year. Now, as far as the school ties are concerned, I've seen what you guys have said about it. I don't love it, but I'm also not completely against it. I have no fear of someone being tied to Nebraska being on the playoff committee this year. I don't think that they're going to be a real threat to get there, so that doesn't really scare me. Now, what I do want, though, are different thoughts of process with how you're going to look at a team getting in. I don't want groupthink. So to just sit back and say, I want all of these kind of guys, like I want all these former coaches or all these former players, I would like the majority of it to be that, but I want somebody that covered it. I want somebody that coached it. I want somebody that was in an administrative role to look at all of the things that go into why a team might be 10-2 as opposed to 8-4. So I just don't want groupthink. And I do think the school ties thing is something that we are probably going to have to move past at some point. But with the power structure the way it is, they're not going to let that happen. They're not going to let it get too far from the vest. When you look at the fact that you can allow an AD that is being paid by a school to be on the committee and they remove themselves, whatever it is, but then the way that that committee treats media members to say, oh, if you're covering the sport right now, we can't put you on this. Like we can't do that.
Yeah.
I think the committee's too old, to be honest with you. I don't think there are enough. Like, why is there not a guy that just finished playing college football that's not on that committee?
Fine, I'll do it.
You know, is like a bank teller or is bagging groceries. I don't care. Like whatever, yeah. Selling cars, whatever. Like that's the guy that I want on that committee because he can sit there and say, no, you don't understand. When we went there and played, this is how it went down. Or I played for that coach. Like, this is why they lost that game because this and this happened and they didn't have that position, which is critical to their third down defense, whatever. I just think that the committee could vary so much more than it does. Yeah. And that's ultimately the most disappointing part for me.
Should college football just move away from the human element completely and get back more closely to what it had?
Stop saying this.
Well, I'm just asking.
Everyone hated the BCS. Why have we reprogrammed our brains?
But there are other like non-BCS. I mean, you could have objective metrics, say like the NFL or Major League Baseball does, and not necessarily that I'm advocating for that, but is that even possible or would that be better or worse?
Yeah, it's going to be possible in about 7 or 8 years.
Okay,
when we have
so
the Big
a Super
Ten and the SEC, and then we'll be fine. There's not going to be any choosing. There's not going to be any selecting. It's going to be, these are our teams that qualified. Mm-hmm. Send them in. Here we go. And then whatever they do at the next level of football, we can debate how those 16, 18, 142 teams get into the playoffs.
If your razor company can't say what a man is, then why let them near your face? That's a dangerous game. You know, Jeremy's Razors gives you a close, clean shave, no confusion, 5 stainless steel blades that destroy stubble, and corporate pandering. Also, a precision trimmer for clean lines, a lubrication strip with argan oil and aloe, plus a 30-day money-back guarantee. You try it, you don't like it, just send it back for a full refund. So right now, head to jeremysrazors.com/crane or use code CRANE at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's jeremysrazors.com/CRAIN and use code CRAIN at checkout for that great deal. We use them. That's why I got this beautifully coiffed hair and clean shaven face. Look at Cone. He lived in the woods for a while. If you've seen Lady Ballers, he shaved it all off. And Blaine?
Go get your lubrication.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He was in a commercial too. So try Jeremy's Razors for 20% off, risk-free, at jeremysrazors.com/crane. That's jeremysrazors.com/crane. Well, like, why can we not have both? Like, that's what I've been saying. Like,
I would 100%, Jake, be on board with the college football playoff committee having their metric.
Yes.
And say, this is not the end all be all, but these are what we deem to be statistically the most important parameters that a team should have to get in. And then if that chair member wants to sit down on a Tuesday night and say, we understand that Ohio State ranks 2nd in our mathematical equation of football that we magically came up with. However, we don't think that team is really good, and we think that that team had a guy injured, and that's why they beat them that week. So we don't have them number 2 in our rankings. But we appreciate the numbers and that were put together by Dr. Whoever with his 7 PhDs that didn't line up and play. We will take it into consideration, but it's not the end-all be-all. It's you cross a massive hurdle there of all the mathematicians and the PFFs and everybody else that wants to just look at numbers. Mm-hmm. You can say, no, we've got it. It's just not the only thing because, and I'm not saying that, David, you're only going to the BCS there, but guys, we hated it.
No,
Everyone wanted to get away from it. And we sat there and said, bring humans back.
Yeah.
They watch football. They know football. Computers don't know football. And this whole coming full circle on it, not that you are, but a lot of people are. It's mind-boggling to me that there's people.
It's revisionist history.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's revisionist history.
Yes.
You're exactly right. My point is, the beauty of it to me would be, okay, if we could have some sort of 3-pillared or 4-pillared system where some of it is objective, truly on numbers that we know what gets baked in. Because they won't tell you now. They won't tell you how they get to these numbers. As long as you tell me how you get to it and everything is even, and you say, all right, we're going to use 50% of what these numbers that everybody is judged on, that's objective. everybody's treated the same. Then 50% that is subjective, in my opinion, without with the human element, that are not attached to currently to institutions. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a situation where North Carolina's AD, who they said wasn't in the room where they were talking about, gets a $100,000 bonus when they make the NCAA tournament, when we all know that they shouldn't have made it. I know that's college basketball, not college football. But to me, I feel like that's a place we could go where at the end of the day, you're like, this is the best system, where it's some sort of combination. But believe me, as an Auburn fan, nobody hates the BCS more than this guy. Well, after what
And you got to remember that video when they're doing their selection. No beers, no
wings.
Nothing. Yeah. I can't trust
Let's televise that. That'd be good television.
For sure. But to Cole's point, he's exactly right. Like, all these people are just old on the committee. Like, we're not writing a constitution for the country. We're trying to pick football, like, who's going to make the college football playoff. So I agree 100%.
And for the record, for me personally, I'm not trying to advocate for a computer system. I want artificial intelligence to slow down as much as possible. Anyway, I don't need a computer telling me which college football teams are the best. I will say, when you have more objective metrics, the way that the professional leagues do, like the NFL or Major League Baseball or the NBA, it creates a cleaner, simpler system. And I think sometimes those leagues look at the chaos of college football every December and laugh at college football a little bit. Although I will say, as someone who covers the sport professionally,
it's great,
it's a lot more fun. Yeah. It's a lot more fun for us to have sort of an open-ended human element for the selection process.
You
I don't know if that's
like
better,
I do.
Though.
The last three off seasons have not even been off seasons, because it's been nonstop chatter about realignment, portal, NIL, NCAA can't do anything. I mean, it's just, it never ends. We had like seven guys decide where they're going out of the portal today. The portal's not open. It just keeps going. It's the gift that keeps giving. However, it's transparency that people want. And like you said, getting away from the objectivity of this is my favorite school or the school that I'm somewhat aligned with, therefore I want them in. Here's the dumbest reason that they don't have some sort of a metric that they use, whether it was 1% or 92% or whatever, is you could have it sponsored and you can attach money to it. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, if it's all about making money, come up with the college football ranking mega poll, whatever it is, sponsored by Dick's Sporting Goods. And there's another however many million dollars that you're going to have in your pocket every year.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they'll figure out a way.
That won't be the problem.
Yeah, I think, Cole, they'll probably do it right after they watch the show.
I'll ask the other question after you.
Okay, well, Cole, let's talk about transparency here. We got a lot of head coaches in the SEC who might be on the bubble a little bit walking to this year. So I want to get your opinion on this question. Which SEC head coach absolutely has to win 9 games this year to keep his job or just to keep the Wolves from the door?
See, you're going to do the thing that I hate more than saying that computers should decide who gets in the playoffs. And
that's why I'm here, Cole.
One individual number that a coach must obtain. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say the way he pronounces Wolves.
Wolves.
I've heard that before.
It's up there. It's definitely on the list. Yeah. I mean, listen, Billy Napier's got some heavy lifting to do because the heat is on. To get to 9 against that schedule, I just don't think should have to happen. I think when you look at the, I always go to, who did you beat? Who did you lose to? If you lost to 3 teams that are in the playoffs and you blew everybody else out and you're going to tell me, well, he lost 3 games, he's got to go, I'm just not going to be on board with that. Or if a Hugh Freeze were to go and split between Alabama and Georgia and they only get to 8 wins, but you thought he had to get to 9, I just don't think a lot of, especially if it's Alabama at the end of the year and that's how you end it, a lot of people are not going to look at it that way. So I think the majority of the heavy lifting probably has to be done by Billy Napier, because so many people and so many factors have been working against him for a while. And I don't agree with a lot of them. I just know how the world works. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are a lot of changes coming to Florida, be it in that administration, both on the academic side and in the athletic side, and with some of the exterior things that have happened through recruiting with other players, vice versa. So, but I think they're going to have a good team this year. I think the offensive line is going to be good. They got a couple monsters at running back. I think Lagway is a guy that elevates everybody around him. Now, defensively, we'll see. Caleb Banks is going to be great. I think the D-line will be okay. But they got to kind of get everybody on the same page with that group. That's kind of where I would go. The Sam Pittman thing, I'm to the point with it that I think it's just always going to be in flux. Mm-hmm. I don't care if he wins 12. I don't care if he wins 2. There's going to be people that want him out. There's going to be people that want him to stay. We all love him. I think he does a good job. I don't think people understand some of the restraints with the Arkansas job. Here's the problem with the Arkansas job, in my opinion, is when NIL sort of came into the picture and it became a reality, everybody said, oh, look, Walmart, Tyson Foods, shipping companies, they're going to be so rich they'll never lose a game. And it just doesn't work that way. Like, we can go – USC has more billionaire graduates than almost every other college football program in the country. Like, why are the Ivy League schools not getting kids left and right?
Yeah.
They got billionaires walking all over the place. We don't understand. Our brains don't compute that a lot of billionaires don't give a shit about college football.
Yeah.
Like, that's just real. So therefore, we would take our money and try to go win. They're not going to do that. So I think we all looked at Arkansas and said, gold mine, rich people. They're going to win. And that's just not the reality of it from a recruiting base standpoint, from a lot of different ways that the program has gone. There are difficulties, hurdles there. Yeah. He's gotten over some. He struggled with others. But I think he's done a pretty good job. There's just always going to be people that this is one of the biggest problems with college football fandom, or I should just say fanatics,
yeah,
is that once we make, you guys know this better than anybody, once most people make up their minds about something, yeah, they don't change it.
It ain't changed.
It doesn't matter if a guy gets good, a guy gets worse. Like, there's guys that have gotten worse, and people will still go to their death. They'll go to their grave saying, five star. He threw 18 interceptions.
Yeah.
At Sierra, discover top workout gear at incredible prices, which might lead to another discovery. Your headphones haven't been connected this whole time. Awkward. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
Well, it's like they say, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of armies that had potential that lost as well. To me, if you gave me one coach that had to win 9, and you may think I'm crazy.
Brian Kelly?
No, I'm going to go DeBoer. DeBoer wins 8 this year, and they miss the playoff again, and he loses to Auburn or something at the end of the year. I'm not saying they'd fire him, but.
You're just saying Saban would come back and do
it. I'm just saying, like, there'd be villagers running with pitchforks and torches in Tuscaloosa. And Maya has been
Jake,
there four times
the problem,
last
though.
Month.
Here's the problem. I do radio in Birmingham, okay? Mm. Saban's last 2 years, we had those calls in November. Like, literally, before they went and played in the Rose Bowl, he lost his fastball. He just ain't got it no more. Like, it's time for new blood. Like, we had those phone calls to our radio show. So,
yeah. Well, that makes me think even more, Cole.
Yeah,
that makes me agree with it even more. Save
it. But what I want you to understand, the other side of that is, if he loses a game, there's going to be that.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, if he doesn't win by 14 in the national title game, there's going to be that. So,
very true.
Someone gets a first down against Bama, they'll burn it down.
For sure.
There you go.
For sure.
Yes.
Cole, I do want to ask you about this post you shared, this run it straight,
dude,
which I always knew as the Oklahoma drill. And, you know, like, Kenny Powers is famous for saying, I'm trying to play real sports. I'm not trying to be the best at exercising. But I saw you tweet this out, and to me, it kind of, like, run it straight is to football what, like, power slap is to UFC a little bit. And I was fascinated by how, the traction this thing is getting. So I want your opinion on it. And I also want to know, could you run Blaine Crane over in this drill?
I mean, yeah.
Blaine, yeah. Some of the guys in the video, I might have to bow out.
For sure.
They put together like tanks. Like, this is the ultimate Tom Rathman sport. Like, Craig Ironhead Hayward would win every championship possible in this sport. It's all the greatness from so many eras of sport. Start with joust back in the like days of the knights. Mm-hmm. Literally, it's joust, Oklahoma, and just competition at its core, like old school Greco-Roman wrestling. The reason I posted is because I thought the dude might not have made it. Like, honest to God, when you watch the clip that
I put
on Twitter,
it's viscerally
brutal. He might not be with us anymore. Mm. And some of the guys in the other clips, if you actually do a little more research on it, don't slow down like he did. Like, it's literally two freight trains that collide. What I need to know are the rules. I don't understand the guidelines of it, because these guys come and run the other gentleman over, and then they stop.
Yeah.
So is it just a run over drill? Do you have to go score? I don't know how you get points. I don't know what the ultimate goal is, but by God, I'm interested. Just based on the one clip, I am in. I will watch.
Yeah. You think the Savannah Bananas sell out stadiums? Do that. Take that somewhere in the middle of Georgia. I mean, I've seen a lot of big hits. I've been through practices and done all this. I'll tell you right now, I want no part of that.
Well, I'm constantly arguing against Josh Pate and others about how much I love overtime in college football, and it's my favorite overtime in sports because it distills the game of football down to its essence near the goal line. But if we got rid of that as overtime for college football,
just do this.
this is Achilles situation. You send your best. You send your best.
It's not much different than what we almost had in the original XFL. Remember, like how you got possession of the ball.
They just rolled.
I have some rules here.
You have rules.
What do they say? Yeah.
Hold on. Matches occur on 20-meter long by 4-meter wide grass runway termed the battlefield. Each bout consists of four rounds where participants alternate roles between ball carrier and defender. Scoring a victory, a match concludes if a participant is knocked out or concussed.
It's power slap.
If both remain standing after four rounds, the judge determines the winner based on impact.
No, so it's who goes
and
to ground.
Dominance exhibiting during collision.
He's right. It's jousting.
I get it.
And power
so you can't
slap.
Go for somebody's legs.
Oh yeah.
Right. That makes sense.
Because that's what I would do if I went against Cole.
First thing.
I would against Cole. I'm going so, straight
hold
for
on,
the knees.
Blaine, did you just say that there's like a judgment call on who is the most dominant participant?
Yeah.
Basically?
If both participants remain standing after four rounds. The judge determines the winner based on impact and dominance exhibited during
and
the
And they switch
collision.
The ball carrier?
And they switch ball
carrier. We got a better chance of playing 100 innings in a Major League Baseball game than we do somebody getting through four rounds of that.
There's no way. Honestly.
No
There's
doubt.
Zero
it's
chance.
A commercial for CTE
0%.
Right there. But
It is jousting, tough man competition, and slap. Biting, whatever that is.
Hey, Cole,
you tough man like Butterbean? You can't box, but you can knock people out. Like that's
for sure. Cole, you versus Takeo Spikes. What are you doing?
Losing?
Yeah. Dude, that's a tough one. Why don't you just send
me versus him?
I've lost that battle.
How bad
I lost
would you
that battle in a 5-yard space? Like, I mean, he knocked my ass out in a 5-yard increment, a 30-yard increment. I'm dead.
Hey, Peter Burns. How long does Peter Burns last in that?
He doesn't. Hey, Jake, this is the best thing that I've seen in the last 2 weeks was when Peter Burns put out his list of the, and I know you guys talked about it, like the 100 men versus the gorilla.
Yeah.
And he's like, here's the five people I'm taking. It's like 2018 Ed Orgeron, Trendon Holliday, Patrick Willis, Ole Miss. And I was like, and I'm not making fun of Peter, but tell me you never played college football without telling me you never played college football, because we all had three or four guys that no one walking the regular streets of town knew who they were because they didn't really play, that you're taking first off the bus if your life depended on it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Robert Baker, Leonardo Carson, first two off the bus for me. And we ain't losing if those two are coming with me.
Yeah. Some guys specialize in that. Like,
Give me Trey Blackman.
Yeah. Trey
Blackman shook my hand one time after I got stung by a bumblebee. I thought he was going to like rip it off.
It's terrifying.
God, you talk about potential. Golly, if that dude could just figure it out. Anyways. But Cole, please tell our listeners, if they don't, which they probably do, tell them where they can find you because you're everywhere, brother.
McElroy and Kubik in the morning, weekdays 7 to 10 Central. You can find it on YouTube. Search Jocks945, JocksFM.com, Cube Show on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. We do it weekly. And doing UFL this weekend, Sunday morning, ABC. We've got St. Louis at Memphis.
Nice.
And probably a bunch of other places.
Well, Cole, we really appreciate your time, brother. You're one of the best in the business. And thank God we don't have to do the run it straight thing. We can just talk about who's on the hot seat or not. But,
I don't need to go to hospital.
I got a family now. So just like
thanks,
you
guys.
Do. Cole Kubik, one of the best in the business.
Thanks, Cole. Appreciate you. Awesome.
All right, make sure you hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. We appreciate you joining us. And like the chances of me playing the run it straight game, we're going gone.